Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring Giants players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Giants third baseman Matt Duffy joins us each homestand.
I think when I'm going best is when I'm just staying short, trying to hit the ball right back up the middle and seeing it well.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner is a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Tamron Lenses and Looking Glass Photo in Berkeley. They have the perfect lens for you. Today's guest is John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. And John, it's amazing how things change so quickly during a baseball season. You know, last time we talked, it looked like things were going pretty well for the Giants, and all we could talk about is how great their lineup is, and all of a sudden, they've lost five games in a row, and we're saying, what happened to the offense? You mentioned in your story that the Giants, with men in scoring position, they're 3-for-35 during the losing streak, so it's been brutal. I mean, how frustrating is it for a team that knows it can do so much better?
Yeah, the first week, they were saying, hey, this team got the punch. They could lead the league in runs. They could lead the league in home runs. and they were for a little while there. But then reality set in, and the coldness of the Giants ballpark in downtown San Francisco, and you know, better pitching, and they got out of Coors Field, and they didn't win much there anyway. But suddenly you have a team that has, what, two home runs in seven games, and this is a team that started with 19 home runs in the first 10 games. So it's a completely different team. Bruce Bochy is talking about maybe mixing in the lineup a little. I mean, remember in spring training, everybody was saying this was a lineup that had no flaws. Well,
right.
Where are you going to pinch hit? Why wouldn't you take anybody out? They all hit lefties well. They all hit righties well. And the left-right combination all the way through, and with the pitcher hitting eighth and Pagan hitting ninth, sabermetrically they were with it and they had everything going and it looked great for a week and a half maybe. But since then it has stalled and they're looking for answers.
You know, the funny thing is that I think probably a lot of people out there thought that Angel Pagan was the weak link in the lineup, and it turns out he's the best hitter right now in that lineup. I mean, that's strange.
He was hitting close to 400 for these the first few games, all the way up until the past couple. He hasn't gotten a hit in the last couple of games. But, yeah, he was hitting 380, 390, and having a blast in the ninth spot. I mean, listen, he had a lot to prove. He had to prove he was healthy. He had to prove he could play left field. He had to prove he could hit again. It's been a couple of years since he's played regularly over a full season, and he's done that. And maybe that's one of the things you do. Do you put him in the two hole? Do you put him somewhere else? You remember a couple of years ago, Bochy was talking about hitting him third. Well, he's done some things that others haven't. And, hey, you know what? Denard Span isn't hitting that well, but you know what he is doing? He's hitting with runners in scoring position. And that's their problem. That's their nemesis. Like you said, 3-for-35 during the five-game losing streak. But I mean, you talk about Span, he's 7-for-12 with runners in scoring position. So do you put him at 3 or 5 or 6? You know, probably not, but, you know, it's a little early. If this were June, July, and the numbers were the same, maybe you think about something drastic like that. But I think Bochy's maybe thinking more about tweaking. One situation could be Matt Duffy at third, put him at third. The last three games, he has 6 hits. Remember the other day, Bochy sat him down because he was hitting the buck and change. Well, now he figured it out. He did something mechanically with Hensley Mullins in terms of his balance and from his load position, you know, the spot where you put the weight on the back leg, giving you time to decide whether to swing or take. And, you know, just took him 24, 48 hours to figure it out. Now suddenly he's a hitting machine again. Maybe you put him third.
Yeah, and he definitely is capable of that when he's going well. I mean, it was kind of surprising to see him get off to the slow start because he was very consistent last year. I know he ran out of gas at the end of the year, but Duffy has the kind of swing that it doesn't look like he's going to go into a deep funk, but maybe it was more mental. Bruce Bochy always seems to know when to push the right button as far as resting a guy, and Duffy has said that, you know, that really helped him going into a better streak now.
He talked about it after the fifth straight loss. The Giants got three hits in the game, and he got two of them, and of course, he was stranded at first base both times. But he said sometimes a mental blow is what you need. You remember last year, they kind of wore him out. They played him every day. You know, Pablo was gone. Casey McGee didn't work out. And then once this guy got the job, he never sat out. I mean, you saw him play practically every day through the end of September, and he kind of wore out at the end. His numbers a little bit took a dive. So Bochy said in the offseason, spring training, hey, we're going to give him a blow here and there so that he will be stronger in September. He gained some weight. Remember, he was paper thin like a young Tim Lincecum. Well, maybe an old Tim Lincecum too, right? But, yeah, they're both 170 pounds. And, you know, when you're a three-hitter in the big leagues, you would think that's not enough. You need bulk. But with him, he extends well. He uses the whole field well. In fact, there's something interesting. I kind of thought that compared with last year, he wasn't going the other way as much. And I asked him about that during his slump here. And he didn't think anything of it. And I just remember him going down the right field line, going to right center, going wherever the pitch was thrown to him. And he said, no, that's not the case at all. It's about the balance point and the load, like I had said. But he also said that it's not like I try to go to right field. It's just where I hit the pitch. You know, if the pitch is low and away or away or middle away, that's where I'm going with it. I'm not trying to pull that ball. So it's, So I checked out at box office, not the reason, because I just thought he was trying to pull a little bit too much, maybe pull happy after his big year last year, but he said that wasn't the case.
We'll have more with our regular guest, John Shea, columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, right after this. Hey, Giants fans, whether you're taking pictures of Little Leaguers or the pros, Tamron Lenses and Looking Glass Photo have the perfect lens for you. The award-winning Tamron 16-300mm all-in-one zoom is more versatile than your basic kit lens. With amazing Tamron quality and image stabilization, you'll never need to switch lenses again, whether they are sliding into home or making a spectacular catch at the wall. Your Tamron lens will catch them all. Tamron has lenses for all of your photographic needs, and you can get your Tamron lens at Looking Glass Photo in Berkeley. Contact them at www.lookingglassphoto.com. When you look at the Giants' bullpen, you know, in recent years, it was just one proven commodity after another, I think. And, you know, right now you've got injuries. You've got Sergio Romo out, George Contos also out. So you've got some guys that you don't know as far as being able to trust them. I mean, Okert had a nice debut. Broadway throws hard. But, you know, what do you think about the bullpen right now? There's so many guys in there, it's kind of new to see how they're going to perform.
Well, I kind of always thought this year that Osich and Strickland would kind of make or break this bullpen. In the offseason, the Giants addressed the rotation. They picked up two stud starters. They addressed the lineup by picking up a new leadoff hitter. But what did they do with the bullpen? Well, nothing. Jeremy Affeldt retired, so scratch him off, and they didn't add anybody. Everybody in this opening day bullpen was in the organization last year. And Lopez is older, Casilla is older, Romo is older. Remember, these are the three of the four guys from the so-called core four, and eventually they're not going to keep doing it. I mean, Affeldt had to step away, and Romo is hurt. He's on the DL. Casilla hasn't been effective in the closer spot, and then there's Lopez. So it's a matter of can Osich and Strickland carry this? And who knows? You know, it's the bullpen hasn't been great, but at the same time, they've worked an awful lot of innings because Kane hasn't been much of a anything beyond a five-inning starter. Same with Peavy. So, and Bumgarner hasn't gone seven, eight, nine innings every game like we're used to. So, you know, Cueto, I think, has been the one bright spot, starting the season 3-0 and then losing his fourth start, giving up three runs in seven innings, which isn't bad. So I think the bullpen really has to prove itself a lot more than it has.
Back with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle in just a moment. The Bay Area is a playground for all levels of cyclists, and the best bicycle store around is Breaking Away Bicycles in Marin. Established in 2005, Breaking Away Bicycles was built on a passion for getting people outside. Donna started the shop after 19 years managing Angel Island, watching kids and adults enjoy riding around the beautiful landscape. She left the corporate world to help more folks get on bikes. Rich joined the team and dedicated his life to being constantly covered in grease. He'll get you rolling no matter what. So stop by Breaking Away Bikes in the heart of Ross at 7 Ross Common, or check them out on the web, www.breakingawaybikes.com. You know, speaking of Osich, he throws so hard. I mean, he could throw close to 100 miles an hour with his fastball, and every once in a while it goes wayward, and, you know, he plunks Peralta a couple of times, and he didn't appreciate it. The benches emptied. So you just wonder about that as a guy who throws hard. Can it be an advantage? I mean, you kind of put that in a guy's mind, in a hitter's mind, that, yeah, I'm not always perfect. I could be a little wild, and you better watch out. And I know he wasn't throwing at Peralta, but do you think that maybe is advantageous in a way?
Well, of course. I mean, that's the wave, having bullpen guys throwing high 90s. You know, this core four wasn't about that at all. It was hitting the spots. It was getting ground balls. It was letting the defense do the work. It's not like they were high strikeout people. And now you have kind of a flood of relievers who are able to do that now, including on this team. So anytime you throw high 90s, the batter maybe might not be as comfortable. Anytime you hit a guy two times in 2 days, the batter is definitely not comfortable. But the Diamondbacks left town after that happened. David Peralta shaken up a little bit, took a couple of steps toward the mound, and Osich didn't say anything, but Peralta did. Peralta said, he basically said to Osich, hey, what's going on? You're going to hurt somebody. Noting that Osich isn't throwing 88, but 98.
Right.
And, you know, Osich in the Giants clubhouse said that he was just missing his spots. And curiously, it happened to be the same guy the second straight day. And that's baseball. That's what he said. So it's all true. And Peralta had, you know, moving on in his conversation, he actually said, you know, what am I supposed to do? Just stay there and take it and run to first base? The baseball code is I'm supposed to take a step or two out there. I wasn't going to get in the fight. And he was kind of free and easy in his conversation. He wasn't ticked off, but he was just saying it was almost like he had to go through those baseball motions just to prove himself, because that's what you're supposed to do at this level. You're supposed to man up and take a couple steps and throw out some words and then be restrained by the catcher and the umpire, and that's exactly what happened.
I mean, I think every once in a while I'd like to see somebody like Robin Ventura go out there and have a Nolan Ryan noogie situation or something like that. I mean, just every once in a while for fun. You know, you mentioned that the Diamondbacks left town. They probably didn't want to leave town. I mean, they love San Francisco. They've won 12 of the last 14 at AT&T Park, and that's strange because the Giants are usually a really good home team. It was only the second time there's been a sweep of a four-game series by any team against the Giants since the park opened, and there was one a couple of years ago. But still, I mean, what do you look at there as far as that being a factor going forward? The Diamondbacks, they feel comfortable in that environment.
Yeah, you're right, and I sort of picked them as a playoff team coming in. They had the key injury, but the Dodgers I didn't see upgrading enough. I didn't see them being healthy enough, and I just obviously the Dodgers figured they could do it all season with depth, and they certainly have a lot of that. And the Giants haven't lived up to expectations early, but you know, the Diamondbacks could make a name for themselves. You know, listen, a couple of these games were winnable. Obviously, when the starting pitcher, Shelby Miller, in the finale of the four-game set goes five walks in two-plus innings, you figure that's a winnable game. But they did nothing with that. They had the bases loaded and no outs, and then Pence got the fourth straight walk, and that brought in a run. Then Miller was pulled, and then here comes the bullpen, and then Brandon Belt hits into double play, and that's the only two runs they score all day. And it's 3-2 going into the final inning, and then Diamondbacks pour it on and win 6-2. And, you know, Bochy said, we just gave him the game. We just let that one get away. That's a game we should have won. And you know, the Greinke-Bumgarner game was close. That's maybe winnable. But then again, with this offense, you can't really say that. In the opener, went extra innings, you know, so I've obviously that's winnable. So it's not like every game was 10-1 here. And now that the Diamondbacks are gone, and, you know, the Marlins are coming into town, and they're out of their division, maybe it's going to be a different story. They slumped at the wrong time because every time they lose, the team in the division wins, and you know that's exactly what Matt Duffy was suggesting. You know, it's tougher to lose within the division, and that's what's been happening with the Rockies, Dodgers, and Diamondbacks.
More with San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea after this.
The spirit of Rose Pistola, a fiery bartender in 1950s North Beach, is still alive with the restaurant that bears her name. Doors to this North Beach institution opened in 1996, and since then, it has become a must visit for locals and world travelers alike. Guests can share house-made pastas, crispy wood-fired pizzas, and classic Italian desserts prepared by Chef Steve Walker 7 days a week. Grab a seat at the bar and sip some grappa. Join Rose Pistola for happy hour offered at the bar weekdays from 3 until 6 p.m. Live jazz trios perform Thursday through Sunday nights. It's the perfect setting for large groups seeking a lively lunch, brunch, or dinner. Rose Pistola is conveniently located around the corner from Beach Blanket Babylon at 532 Columbus Avenue. Join Rose Pistola as they celebrate 20 years.
A little reminder, each week during the season, we'll be giving away a free t-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. All you have to do is ask a question for one of our guests, and if your question is chosen, you'll receive a free t-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. To send your questions in, email us at thesportsvirus@gmail.com or on Facebook, thesportsvirus.com page, and please like us while you're there. Now back to our conversation with San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea. Well, those Florida Marlins, they have Barry Bonds in uniform as their hitting coach, and it's the first time since 1992 that Bonds will be wearing another uniform other than the San Francisco Giants, maybe an all-star uniform. But, I mean, it's strange when you think about, you know, like Joe Montana when he was with the Kansas City Chiefs, although that was as a player, or Joe Namath with the Rams. I mean, he was a Jet. And what would it be like if Derek Jeter came back maybe as an A's coach or something like that? I mean, he's a Yankee. That's it. So Bonds really is a Giant through and through, but here he is with the Marlins. So how strange is that going to be this weekend?
Hey, Joe DiMaggio came back as an A's coach.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
It's true. There's a precedent.
Yeah. Hey, I think it'll be good stuff, as always. It'll be, you know, electric at the ballpark. But the thing is, with a batting coach, unlike a pitching coach who will go out to the mound once or even several times a game, or the manager who will go out to speak with an umpire or contest a call, et cetera, when do you ever see the hitting coach? Well, never, except for a batting practice. And oftentimes, if you're not there within the first 10 or 15 minutes when the gates open, you're not going to see batting practice. And with Bonds, he'll be at the batting cage, during BP, and that'll be about it. Now, I'm sure the Giants will have to put him on the scoreboard and let everybody cheer for him, as I'm sure they will. But it's a weird dynamic, because here's a guy who wanted to stay in the organization. He wanted to help hitters. The Giants weren't about to move Hensley Mullins. As soon as he comes, they win 3 championships. A lot of people blame him for this and that, but record speaks for itself. And they went a long way with teams that didn't have a whole lot of firepower. And in terms of manufacturing runs, that was pretty much their forte. So now Bonds comes in, and back from an era when it was about single-single and Bonds three-run jack, that was their offense. And the last few years of his administration here, they just didn't win. So it was time to turn the page. They kept him on for another season to break the record, and the team stalled overall because of it. He got his record. The Giants made a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. But then he had the whole Belco thing, and then he sued owners thinking they blackballed him by not allowing to play after 07, and you know, he might be right about that, but he lost in court. So now he's free from all the legalese, and he's back into baseball. The Giants haven't even put him up on the Wall of Fame. I mean, this is a Wall of Fame where it's not that tough to get in. You just have to have either 5 years with the team and an All-Star appearance, or, what, 9 seasons with the team. And he qualifies head over heels on that one. So it's a matter of, well, why haven't you put him in? Well, the legal case is one. Maybe Bonds hasn't been totally on board, too. And eventually they'll do it. But they're not going to do it this weekend, apparently, because Bonds doesn't. Apparently, they did ask Bonds and say, hey, do you want to be honored on the Wall of Fame this weekend? And he apparently said no, because he doesn't want it to be about him. Imagine that.
Right. So,
because he's only a couple of weeks into this, you know, he doesn't want to just show up and be the main dog on a team that has Giancarlo Stanton and all these other young bucks who are trying to make a name for themselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wonder, you know, I guess the next step after being on the Wall of Fame would be to get a statue. I mean, at some point, if they're going to just open the door, wouldn't that happen? You see these statues for the other players going up, that, you know, Hall of Fame players.
Yeah, and maybe they could say, hey, you have to be in the Hall of Fame to have a statue. I mean, they're putting in Gaylord Perry. They're going to erect a statue for him. They did it for Perry. And these are two guys who didn't play their entire career, or even most of their career, in San Francisco, but they're kind of the same guy. They went elsewhere and won their Cy Young Awards and MVP Awards, and Cepeda won his championship elsewhere. But they were kind of big deals here in the 60s, and Cepeda stayed around the area, works as an ambassador for the team. Gaylord obviously doesn't. He's back home. But I always thought that if they put one up for Cepeda, they should put one up for Perry, and that's what they're doing with Bonds. And that's another story.
Yeah.
Absolutely, they should have a statue. It shouldn't be just about the Hall of Fame. We all know why he's not in the Hall of Fame and might not ever be in the Hall of Fame. But that shouldn't keep the Giants from putting up a statue. I mean, the fans would love that. There might be a lot of fans who don't love that. But that's Barry Bonds, a very polarizing personality and figure. So where do you go with that? Well, I think it will happen one day, and the Giants have been real slow about any of this happening, but I imagine they've got to put him on that wall before they make a statue of him, right?
Yeah, you're right. Well, wait, you heard this here first. Here's my idea. You put the statue out in McCovey Cove, and you put it out there sort of like the Statue of Liberty. So it's out there in the bay where he hit a lot of home runs. No?
Yeah. I guess he was quoted in a Florida paper saying or in an interview the last few days saying, that might be McCovey Cove, but it's actually my cove, noting that Willie Mack never hit a home run there,
right,
and I hit a bunch there, so it's my cove, and I imagine he was joking because he likes McCovey a lot.
Right. Last thing on Bonds before we finish up here. You know, it just seems like the little things that he was able to do talking to some Giants players were beneficial, and that leads me to believe that he is going to be successful. I mean, you can just look at his record and his knowledge and say that he will be, but, you know, he pointed out something to Michael Morse during, I think it was the NLCS, and that worked out, and even I saw something in the Chronicle about Brandon Crawford said, you know, Bonds told him, don't be afraid to get jammed, and he didn't know exactly what that meant, but that he got a base hit when he got jammed. You know, just those little pieces of information. Does that lead you also to believe he'll be successful?
Yeah, well, the thing is, Crawford told me that Bonds didn't really tell him a whole lot of things that other batting coaches didn't. Hensley Nguyen, Steve Decker, and previously Joe Lafay, the three coaches that Crawford has had here, they all might have said the same things. But as Crawford said, you know, hearing it from maybe the best hitter who ever lived, it kind of sticks with you a little longer.
Absolutely.
A little one-on-one with, it's like listening to Ted Williams or DiMaggio or Tony Gwynn, any of these just wonderful hitters. But, yeah, that's the thing about Crawford. He said Bonds told him, said, don't be afraid to get jammed. And Crawford kind of laughed, thinking, well, I never saw Bonds get jammed in his entire career. He never put himself in a position to be jammed. And then the anecdote was first time up, after that, he just hits a ground ball when being jammed, and next time up, he kind of thinks about it a little more and gets a single. And he said, "Okay, that's what he meant." So it is a situation where Bonds isn't going to try to invent the game. His dad was a batting coach. He's I think, doing it somewhat in his honor as well. You know, Bobby Bonds was the batting coach when Barry came to San Francisco in 93, and they were together for several years, and that was kind of cool for Barry. So anyway, all these years later, the kid has given it a try, and you know, so far so good. It's not like the Marlins are tearing up the East, but it's a long season, and it'll be interesting to see what these players say reacting to the Bonds tutoring, because he's going to be, you know, in their face for 6 months here. And the thing, you know, these coaches show up at noon for a night game, and we'll see how long this will last, you know, with Barry Bonds, because you know, he kind of played by his own rules over the years.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle in part one of our conversation. Join us again on Monday for part two. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.